I'm Michelle Ely from the Starling Tribune, an Arrow TV show fan podcast, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other amazing geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, a show where we look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. Today, things are getting a little weird because I'm here with Chris and Cody from Believer Skeptic, and we're looking at Men in Black. Because of course we are. But...
Whoops, I kind of stepped over you there, so.
That's okay. Yeah. Hello. Yeah, exactly. No, we're super excited to be here. In fact, in honor of the episode, I am wearing... Well, blue plaid, but that's okay.
Anywho, so yes, I'm Chris. We are from BSP Believer Skeptic Podcast, an LGBTQ paranormal comedy podcast.
Yeah, and we pick paranormal topics and we present information. And then I don't believe in that stuff usually, so I'll debunk it. And Chris does, so he'll talk about why people believe. And I think we're here because we did an episode on Men in Black.
At one point,
in the very recent history.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, it's nice to have you on, and Cody, you're wrong.
Oh, wait, I'm what? How am I wrong?
Because ghosts are real.
Oh, so you're a believer.
I am.
So am I.
Interesting. Well, so obviously. Do you have any personal experiences that led you to believe, or are you just... a believer without proof?
There is a ghost that hangs out at my parents' house. It's this like 20s or 30s, around that age range, lady. And I was sleeping down in the living room and she's just walking through the house. I mean, nothing really going on. She's just kind of walking through the house.
Wow. At first I thought you said with nothing on. And I was like, oh,
the ghost? Wait,
what? The ghost. Yeah. So did you see her or hear her? And I know this isn't Men in Black, but now I'm fascinated.
I saw her. I don't remember really hearing anything, but I had also just woken up. So that's not a big surprise.
Wow. That's unbelievable. And have you had multiple experiences?
That's pretty much the main one for me.
Oh, okay. Okay. Fascinating. I'm the person I actually want to believe, but I've never had anything happen. And so I'm kind of waiting.
But then when it does happen, he's going to freak out.
Correct.
But we're not here to talk about ghosts today. We're here to talk about Men in Black. Specifically, yes. Going in with the 1997 Will Smith movie. Because Tommy Lee Jones wasn't important 5 seconds ago when I said that.
Which, yeah, I have not seen that movie in quite a long time. And I think I've only seen the first one. I think the second one as well, but I've only seen the two.
Yeah, and I remember the big thing about that movie is I know now whenever you see Will Smith is headlining a movie, your first reaction is, ugh. But back then, he was like it. And it was actually like, yeah, Will Smith's in it. I got to see it.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen this movie for a while either until I watched it. It is currently on Netflix if anybody wants to jump on there and watch it again. So that's a really good point for it right now.
Yeah.
I think we just drove millions of viewers
to go watch
Men in Black.
Oh, Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And Tommy Lee Jones, he was actually, because that wasn't too long after Fugitive, right?
I don't think so.
I don't remember. Yeah.
So I think that was two pretty big headliners for the movie too. And back then people weren't really familiar with the concept or anything, so it was kind of an unknown, I believe.
Well, I mean, prior to that were the comics, which we're going to talk a little bit about.
Yeah.
That, but all of this actually stems from conspiracy theories and ufology and whatnot. So.
Yeah, and that's what we had talked about in our original episode.
Yeah.
The supposedly true stories of the Men in Black. Can we ask if you liked the movie, Chris?
I did like the movie. I liked it a lot when I was younger when I watched it the first time. I liked it again when I watched it just in the past couple days to see this. I've always liked this movie.
And I'm trying to gauge if you're our generation or if you're younger. I think you're younger than us. I'm trying
33.
To like, so when this came out, okay, so you were a kid whenever it came out.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So you probably had that kid wonder, like, wow, this is so amazing.
Wait, so how old are y'all then?
Well, Chris just had his 50th birthday.
Shut up. No, I'm 3 months shy of 43.
And I'm 44.
Well,
we
y'all
just look fantastic.
Y'all are clearly aliens because you do look fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well, I claim it on my roots. It's my melanin.
No, I claim it on being gay. It's like gay is synonymous with looking young.
Not all of them.
That is true. That is true.
So, should we kind of get into the history or like the original story of where this kind of came from?
Oh, yeah. How do we want to proceed from here?
Yeah, let's go ahead and take a look at that because I focus mostly on the movie getting ready for this one.
Okay. Well, like Cody said, we did a full episode on supposed encounters with the Men in Black. For those of you who don't know that are listening, Men in Black are a supposed man or men dressed in black suits who sometimes claim to be government agents who threaten or harass people who have had paranormal encounters, basically so they can keep quiet about them. They generally can be traced back to one single encounter on June 27th of 1947 by a man called Harold Dahl. You've heard of him, obviously, but Chris, do you know anything about this story?
I do not.
All right. Well, this happened in Maury Island in Washington, where Harold saw six objects flying about a half mile above his boat while they were out fishing, I believe. One of these objects at one point took a fall, which produced some metallic debris that actually fell on his son as well, that he said. He was able to take a picture and showed his supervisor, who then returned to the site to figure out what this object was. The next day, Harold had a visit by a man in a black suit who was able to tell him in detail what he had encountered. This man in black then told Harold that he is never to speak about the incident again, and if he did, bad things would happen to him, but obviously we know the story, so he obviously said something. So, from then forward, there's been other encounters would be reported and would be mostly synonymous with UFO or alien encounters. Although there are a few other paranormal encounters that they have been involved in as well, such as Mothman is one of them. And again, there's a bunch of creepy stories out there regarding the Men in Black, so I would definitely urge you to check those out.
The debris fell on his son, and he's still alive? Like this comet from the
Not
the
like big
ethers?
pieces, but it was, yeah, some debris fell on the son. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm just imagining like a porta potty from a plane, like landing on him. I don't know.
I mean, even if it's small, that's falling from pretty far up. That's going to hurt when it hits you.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah, because there's that like urban legend, I don't know if it's true, like if a penny or a quarter falls on someone from the Empire State Building, that it would kill them.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's true, but I figured, it's not falling from space, so it's going a little bit faster.
Yeah.
I don't know. But so Chris, do you believe that the Men in Black are real, Chris?
I'm not sure about that one. I know that there's definitely probably some people that are going around making sure that stories don't get out, but I don't know if the reality here is that extreme.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, to an extent, there is probably some kind of agency of some sort that tries to keep these under the radar.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say that they're like these weird paranormal kind of creepy guys, you know?
And that's kind of what leads me to kind of one of the points that I was going to make with this is that, so like if you're looking at the Men in Black movie, and this is also a kind of a key difference, I think, between Men in Black and the movie and how they kind of are seen in real life, is that in the movie, they're basically earthlings or people, you know, who are, let's just say, intimately familiar with how Earth works. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones trying to basically keep all the aliens and stuff under wraps, right? Yeah. So they're earthlings, humans, you know, basically being like, shh, like, people aren't ready for this yet. But most of the stories that we found that were supposedly true were the opposite in the fact that, and let me just quote a quick example. So I actually had one of my stories was about a guy, I think his name was like Paul Smith or something like that. And he was out with his friends hunting, and an alien supposedly landed And whenever the alien got out of the ship, the guy shot him, like freaked out, pulled out his gun and shot him, which for me was like, that is, why would you do this? Crazy. So anyway, later on after that, people showed up in black, you know, the men in black appeared and they were, you know, very odd in appearance, like humanoid, but not quite. But when they arrived, they asked him all about the clothes that he was wearing. And they were fascinated by his clothes. In fact, they even made him take them to his closet so they could look at the clothes that he was wearing. And they were also asking other questions about very everyday normal Earth things. And they just seemed to kind of be out of touch with how Earth worked, and they were fascinated by Earth stuff. And that was the part to me that felt so different from the movie, is in real life, they almost seemed to be the people that were out of touch, or the UFO or the aliens versus human people. You know, does that make sense?
It does, almost like aliens trying to cover for themselves.
Well, yeah, yeah. Which leads me to this too, is that there are theories, well, there's one theory about the men in black, that the real quote unquote real men in black, that states that aliens are much closer to us than we even know. And if this information was leaked, it would cause panic across the world. That's why the men in black are trying to stop that information from going out too far to the wrong people.
See, that's just cool. I'm one of those people that's like, even if I don't believe that we've had aliens come here, which I'm kind of back and forth on that, the universe is just too big to not have something else out there.
Yeah.
I agree. And that's kind of one of my believer things, is that, you know, like I don't know about all the UFO stories and proof and stuff, but I do think, like, you're right. Like, statistically speaking, with the number of planets and everything out there, there's bound to be something that's alive that's out there. So I totally agree with that. But Chris, you said you're not sure if you believe, like, if a UFO is here or not. So, like, it's not a yes or no. You're kind of up in the air about it.
Right.
Interesting. Well, I also feel like then, if we're just looking at the concept of men in black and what their kind of job is to keep the stuff under wraps, you know, unlike the movie where they can pull out a device and just blank people's memories and that's effective, the problem I kind of had with it is the fact that they show up and they're like, shh, don't tell this story. I actually had another story that I had shared in our episode about a guy, you know, who saw something, and the men in black showed up and actually held up a coin in front of the guy. And right in front of the guy's eyes, the coin just vanished. And the man in black basically said, if you talk about this, the same thing will happen to you. So, like, this totally unveiled threat, but the story's out. And if you look at all these, like, the men in black encounters, all of the stories leaked. They're all out. We know about all of them. So it's like, if these are supposedly aliens or people with all this power, well, they're not doing a very good job. You know, they kind of suck.
All of them are just veiled threats. They don't actually follow through with their threats.
Yeah, it's like super Nancy Drew, where it's like, don't do this or else, Nancy Drew.
Or else what?
I don't know.
No, yeah, but exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's a reference that went completely over my head because I don't know Nancy Drew.
I don't either. That's Cody's thing.
Okay.
That is my thing. Yeah. I think any fan will get that, where it's just that thing where every book, because it's for kids, she gets these threats like, stay off this case, Nancy Drew, or you'll regret it.
And then nothing happens.
Nothing ever happens. Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and with me too, this is Chris again, the other Chris. I've always been fascinated and studied the paranormal. Well, I wouldn't say studied, but liked a lot of paranormal stuff. But I never knew about the Men in Black until I watched that movie. So, that was my first thing, quote unquote, encounter with the Men in Black.
You know, that's true of me too, that I really thought when I saw the movie that it was just a totally made up story that really didn't have such a huge basis in all the supposed, you know, history. Like, Chris, what about you?
When I saw it, I just thought it was a cool movie about aliens. Like, I didn't know there was the comic thing. I was sitting there with my wife, just really watching the opening credits, trying to see where they mentioned that it's a comic, because I had never noticed that before.
And is it mentioned anywhere? Like, I guess in the closing credits somewhere, it's got to be have a shout out.
We didn't look in the closing ones because right there in the beginning, it says, oh, hey, you know, based on the Marvel comic Men in Black. Because at that by that point, Marvel had bought Malibu.
Oh, okay. Okay. So have you seen the movie just the two times basically then?
No, I saw it a bunch when I was little.
Okay.
I just never had a reason to look for that kind of thing. And opening credits were always Run and Get Snacks.
Yeah,
and, totally.
Well, that's true. And just out of curiosity, like, you hadn't read the comic then before you saw the movie?
No, not at all. I didn't even know the comic
and
existed.
Did it spawn something? Like, did you like? So, at what point did you find out it was a comic?
When I was looking at the list of games I was going to have to cover for this show.
Uh-huh. So then, you've never read the comic then?
I have not yet.
All right. Cool. Yeah, me neither.
I looked at it. I don't know if you've seen this. Okay, if you look at just the first issue, mm-hmm. the art for it
is
awful. I love
really?
It seems like something like a 10th grade art student would draw. That's not awful, but it's not good. And it was kind of creepy. And it made me wonder if that was kind of the art style in the 90s. Like if that was the meta for comic book art.
Yeah, it might have been. But No, I mean, that looks... pretty,
oh, wait, that's not the one I saw.
It looks like pretty in brand with that kind of style.
Oh, no, that actually looks normal. I saw one with, like, this woman, like, clutching her bosom, and it was just totally random. So maybe yeah. I was, what the heck was I looking at?
I don't know.
This looks normal. Okay, all the stuff I just said.
Is wrong.
Please ignore it. Oh, there it is. That's the one.
Yeah, because that's the one I saw, yeah. too.
This one.
With
oh, yeah.
Woman.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the font, like everything about that.
That's pretty 90s because I have some graphic novels from the 90s and they're like that.
Yeah, yeah. Is that meta, Chris?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought, I was like, I don't know who that would entice to pick up that one.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
So speaking of, I'll get into the comics a little bit here. So like we said before the movie came out, the comic book series came out in 1990 and 91 as 2 3-issue black and white series. When the first movie came out, Marvel Comics released 3 new more Men in Black comics with the first being an adaptation of the movie, while the other two were totally different stories. To date, no further Men in Black comics have been published at this point. The comic was actually written by Lowell Cunningham and illustrated by Sandy Carruthers. In the comic series, the Men in Black is an agency that is assigned to deal with and cover up different paranormal encounters, such as the movie, but not just aliens like in the movie. Like the movie is just all about just about the aliens. While in the Men in Black, they cover all kinds of paranormal stuff.
Like even like vampires and werewolves and stuff.
Yeah. They deal with anything from from demons to vampires, like you said, and of course, aliens. And the second issue of the series is what the first Men in Black film is based on. So, and in the comics, the Men in Black are allowed to do anything necessary to complete one of their tasks, which includes killing. So needless to say, the comics are quite a bit darker than the movies that they spawned.
Yeah, and I think that's probably... So, okay. So I think, and I've actually heard this on one of your previous episodes from people, but like, I admit, and I think you'd said, like, we're not going to go so much into the comics here, but I am not a huge comic book reader, I admit. But I feel like comics are typically much darker than any portrayal you usually see on screen from comics. Is that right? That's probably true, right?
For the most part, that's how it seems to be going. You know, I mean, you've got your like Blade things where they don't really shy away from the violence, but... Yeah, for the most part, the comics tend to be a lot darker.
And I think that's because of the Hollywood rating system. You know, they want to get people in seats, so they have to do it at a certain age and whatnot. They're not going to get into as much violence as they would, or able to get into as much violence as they would in a comic book.
That is true, because there's that definite, you can see like the, I don't know about a bell curve, but I'll just say that for lack of a better word, like a bell curve of revenue. Whenever a movie goes from G to rated R, like, you know, PG-13 to R, I think the typical income drops drastically. So because Men in Black was, the movie was rated PG-13, was it not?
Correct.
And I'm sure that if it were based really on the comics, you know, then it would definitely have got an R rating and probably wouldn't have done as well. So that's probably, I'm sure that's definitely the reason behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because R movies, until you got to Deadpool, were definitely not big money makers.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That was the biggest, that was the first kind of comic-y movie that actually made a lot of money, isn't it?
That was rated R anyway.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I remember...
But what I find, too, is, I think, anyways, more so in the past, comics were catered more to a younger audience, which now I think they're more catered to quite a wider audience, including adults.
I just feel like before, comics were just catered... I feel like they were catered to blech. Like most of them, the plots and the stories and everything, it was just Hollywood just trying to vomit something out that a lot of people might be familiar with just to make money. And it's only been recently that they're finally really focusing on giving them stories. But I do feel like I remember Kick-Ass, I did read that graphic novel, mm-hmm. and the movie was pretty faithful to the gore, and that was rated R, but I guess that didn't do so well.
Yeah.
It did all right, and it was a pretty good movie. I never read it, so I can't compare it to that.
Yeah, I liked the first movie. I didn't see the second one.
Well, now that I said that, I'm trying to remember the graphic novel. It's on my shelf, and I'm like, wait a minute. What happened in that? But I remember liking it.
Yeah. Or like Spawn. Spawn was another one, which was pretty, really dark.
Yeah.
And the movie was not great.
Well, I'm trying to remember. So for casting for the movie Men in Black, mm-hmm. was there any person in there that you really liked or disliked in the movie that was cast?
Well, yeah, let's talk about that first before I go into some differences.
Okay. Yeah. Chris, what did you think?
I really love this era of Will Smith. I think that he brought a nice little comedic touch to everything, like he did in everything he was in around then. And that contrasted with the seriousness of Tommy Lee Jones, I think was about perfect.
I agree. That's what I was going to say, is that this is a pair that if somebody just said, oh, we're going to put Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones in a movie together, you'd be like, what? You know, so like putting them together in this, like it just showed just that huge, the dichotomy between the two. And I think that's what made this movie work really well.
Yeah. And I admit that I actually am a massive Vincent D'Onofrio fan.
Really?
I think he is so freaking talented. And so whenever he came on and was kind of this weird, and he usually plays these just really odd, awkward roles, you know? And so he came on as this bug guy. And you could just tell that just something was wrong about him. Like it was perfect for, you know, like for the type of thing that he plays. But I think that he is so good in this. And I was excited to see Linda Florentino. I don't know how you pronounce her name, because she was in Dogma. And that was one of those movies that I was like, who's this? And I just loved her in that.
Yeah.
They both did really well. And Tony Shalhoub was also Tony really Shalhoub good in there.
Yeah, I like him.
I did as well.
Yeah. I love seeing him as things that aren't Monk.
I've never seen Monk, actually. I know the show, but I've never seen it.
You should. It's really good.
Because he has like severe like OCD. Didn't he win like the Emmy like every year for that?
I've never kept up with that stuff. I'm usually so far behind watching things, it's pointless for me to care.
Yeah. I am the worst at watching. Like I've never seen like hardly anything. I've never seen Breaking Bad, an episode, Walking Dead, Game of Thrones. Like I just don't watch anything.
Well, you don't have a TV in your apartment, so that probably doesn't help.
But I have like Netflix on my phone and everything. I just don't watch stuff. I did start watching The Mandalorian to get way off topic, and it's fantastic. But anyway.
So, as we were talking about actors, I wanted to also talk about kind of, I guess, the differences between the comics and the movie. The movie and the film also both have Agent J and Agent K.
Yeah.
But they're not very much like the comics at all. For one, Agent J, who's played by Will Smith in the movie, in the comic, he's a Caucasian DEA agent, who, as we all know, Will Smith is definitely not Caucasian, so there's one huge difference.
What?
In the movie, Will Smith is kidnapped and given an ultimatum to join the Men in Black, while in the comic, he is actually selected based on his previous proven abilities, you know? So So he has chosen, not made to do it, you know.
And then, but isn't that like, because I read that and I was like, that was in the movie, wasn't Will Smith picked and chosen to come to this kind of audition where he was competing against all these other guys? And I remember there's a scene that was like the defining moment where they're like, shoot the bad guys, and all these aliens pop up on the screen, and then at one point this little girl comes up and all the guys are shooting all the other aliens, but Will Smith shoots the little girl and they freeze him and they ask him why. If a freaking little girl was sitting here with all these aliens, like, there's got to be something messed up about her to just be there, right? And so they chose him then after that. Isn't that true?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I also like the other part right before that where everybody was struggling in their egg chairs to try to answer the test and he pulls the table over.
Two seem to get along in the movie. I mean, they have their quips with each other, but in the comics, there is actually, it seems to be like no trust between the two. They just don't trust each other, and even withhold information from each other as well.
Huh. Interesting.
So, yeah.
Wow. I also seem just to read or hear something too that, And is it okay that we talk about the comics some here, Chris, or should we focus more on the movie?
No, we can talk about the comics.
Okay. Because I also read something, too, that said in the comics, the Men in Black organization is much more self-serving in the comic books mm-hmm. than it is in the movie. Because in the movie, it's kind of benevolent, where they really are trying to protect Earth from intergalactic threats and, you know, and also the people. But in one of the comics, one of the agents goes rogue after learning that the Men in Black agency is seeking to manipulate and shape the world in their own image. Mm-hmm. Like, so they're basically, you know, using all that control to their own ends. And I thought that was really interesting.
And the other thing that I found too was with the, I lost my train of thought. Oh, no, the movie. I mean, obviously, movies in general give more space for that, but the movie has a lot more background information on certain characters, while the comics don't dive that deep into those the characters as well.
Okay. Well, it's usually kind of opposite between books and movies.
Yeah.
I like the, like, if we're tying it to the real thing where the Men in Black just kind of have letters for names, that it does seem to tie into, like, whenever we talked about the real Men in Black, the sightings, they looked kind of like generic people. Like, if you were to go to Walmart and find a great value human, that's kind of what I imagined a Men in Black would be, because they were kind of humanish, but most of the sightings had them being bald with no eyelashes or eyebrows, kind of hairless. And in one of the sightings that I'd read about, the guy, you know, his mouth seemed okay, but he wiped his face with a handkerchief because it was hot, and lipstick came off, and you could see that his lips were just like flesh colored instead of being pink. And so it was that thing where they're almost generic humans in their appearance, which leads me to, like, if you have their names being just generic letters, I like that tie-in between the two.
Yeah. And I think the generic humans, as you say, also comes into play in the sense that they're trying to fit in as best they can, and they are trying to make themselves up to be what they think human is.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And that would be a big difference between the movie and kind of the real thing.
Yeah.
So now I just really want to go read the comics. especially knowing it's such a short run there, and I can get the whole thing as opposed to like X-Men, where I'd have to spend the next 50 years reading 5 issues a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so true.
You can finish these. I mean, there's only, how many did I say?
Yeah, just a handful. Like,
yeah, just a handful.
I'm surprised they haven't made more since the movies blew up.
Yeah.
Me too. It seems like something that you'd have a ton of material to put in there. And so I don't know why they wouldn't.
I agree, especially if you're not limiting yourself to just aliens like they do in the movie. You could do so much paranormal stuff with that stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And with that too, like a big difference in the movie and the comic too is since they are, like in the movie, you see that the aliens are living among us basically, you know?
Right, right.
Well, in the comics, since they're dealing with different paranormal aspects, the aliens are a surprise to them, unlike how it is in the movie where they like know that they live with among us, you know?
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Yeah. With all this said, should we assume that everyone is familiar with the movie, or should we recap what it's about?
Yeah, let's give it a quick recap.
Okay. Do you want to do that? Who wants to be in charge? And since you just watched it, Chris, did you want to give it the recap?
Right. So just a real quick recap of the movie in case anybody hasn't seen it. Again, you know, go on Netflix and watch it. It's really good. There's a government agency that has been going around since the 60s just covering up for aliens. Again, this is really just aliens in the movie. And so you have Agent K and Agent D who are going around on this mission around the Mexican border, and they find an alien who is in some border crossing stuff, discover him because he doesn't speak Spanish at all.
That could sound very relevant to today's world if that movie came out today.
That's super true.
There were a few little spots in there that popped up.
Yeah.
But they found him because they said things like, "You're really ugly. I'm going to punch you in the face now." And he just laughed about it. You don't speak Spanish, you're an alien. And they let everybody else go.
That's funny.
So Agent D freaks out when a little alien attack comes. He decides that he's just done. He needs to retire. So Agent K has to go find himself a new partner. Meanwhile, Will Smith's character, James Edwards, is running around after an alien throughout New York trying to catch him, except he doesn't know it's an alien. So he runs, catches the guy, and Agent K kind of catches up with him too. And he's really impressed that Will Smith can keep up with this guy because, you know, he's an alien who can jump to the top of a building in a single bound.
And if you remember, so I know, like, whenever you're like thinking about movies, and sometimes, you know, I haven't seen the movie in years and years, but there are those scenes that just you never forget, they just stick in your memory. And the one that I remember, one of them, is whenever he's going to catch the alien there at the beginning, and the alien's like legs turn backwards because, like, you know, because it leaps kind of like a gazelle or something, where its calves or its legs are bent backwards. And whenever that happened, I just remembered that freaking me out.
Yeah, there's all kinds of little things in there like that. And like, if you're just kind of passively watching the movie while you're doing something else, you're going to easily miss it, which sucks because all those things are just a really nice touch, I think.
Agreed. Okay, sorry, continue.
So anyway, Agent K picks Agent J to be his new partner. J for James Edwards. That just hit me.
Wait, what?
Yeah, his name's James Edwards, so that's why he's Agent J.
I didn't know that till right now either.
They go through the whole recruitment stuff that we talked about earlier. And then there's an alien that crash lands on Earth. This is the way I was thinking about it the entire movie. Kills Wilson Fisk from Daredevil and takes over his body. And they spend the entire rest of the movie trying to take them out.
Yeah.
And then, big surprise, they do.
What I remember the most is that the bug guy. I mean, how he turned into a bug.
Yeah, and he was just kind of gross and everything. Yeah. Like, I think like his skin is bubbling at one point or something. And also, of course, remember that like kind of their informant is this pug.
Yeah, I forgot the pug. Yes,
he's a cute little
and
guy.
So they go and they talk to this dog.
Yeah. Frank the pug.
Frank the pug. He's a cutie.
Oh, we're going to sit here and pet imaginary dogs while we drop some promos for a few other shows.
Hi, I'm Dan.
And I'm Jake.
And we're the Supersons, a podcast centered around DC Comics, where every other week we break down two stories to make the DCU a little more accessible to new readers.
You can find us on Twitter at DC Supersons.
And you can download the show anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Tomorrow I'll do something out of stories. My feet will walk on earth that is not of earth.
Unforeseen circumstances are hard to prepare for. If you can prepare for them, they're foreseen.
Unless our plans change catastrophically, it should be fine.
I've been asleep for decades. How much more patience do you want?
They're growing us a village next to the base of a space elevator on a brand new planet.
For you to have this new and better world, I have to stay behind and make it.
Unimaginable animals.
You didn't try the cheese.
What will it mean for all the stories you've told me to be alive on a new world?
It's so beautiful.
Trust me.
Here we go.
Check out This Planet Needs a Name. Everywhere podcasts are found.
Those are some great shows you should check out, but first let's finish up with this one. So this game, now, I mean, we like the movie. I'd say we like to love the movie, depending on which one of us you're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
The comics seem really cool. We're all going to go back and look at them. Or at least lie about it. And then the game. Oh boy.
That good, huh?
Yeah. How much torture did y'all put yourselves through looking at the game?
Very little. How about you?
I mean, I read up on it, and I couldn't find many good reviews about it. Just put it that way.
I tried to get my emulator working, and I don't know why it wasn't working. I probably just hit a super weird setting somewhere. So I had to watch gameplay videos on this one and couldn't actually play it. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the best move.
Really?
Well, I mean, I'm sure it seemed like one of those things where you see the movie comes out, it's a huge hit, and they just basically vomit out a game as fast as they can just to coincide with that and kind of, you know, take some of that money.
Oh, definitely. This one is very loosely based on the movie, and it's very obviously going for the movie and not the comics. You've got all the problems with early 3D that you have back in 97. Everything is just so dark looking. It's weird because it's like the point and click adventure games on computer where you have to click the exact pixel to make something happen. That kind of got brought over here, which doesn't work when you're using a PlayStation controller.
Oh no, absolutely, absolutely. And so it was like that awful weird blend. And so then it sounds like, you know, it's one of those where it's 3D and it's an adventure, like you'd said. So you have to line up, like say in front of like a jump that you're trying to make, and it literally has to be pixel perfect or it doesn't work and you die.
There's a part where you have to jump off a fire escape, but you specifically have to jump. You can't just fall off the fire escape.
So either way, you're falling off a fire escape, but you have to jump.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so idiosyncratic with these things that you have to do. I mean, look it up. This was made by Gigawatt Studios, which I don't expect you all to know at all.
Mm-hmm.
As best as I can tell, they made...
What else did they make?
They made 6 games, as best as I can tell. I don't know... Let me open all these up and see, actually.
Oh, yeah, because Unlike Chris, I
was a gamer.
Avid gamer.
So they made Ultimate Ride for Windows. Never heard of that one.
Okay.
Looks like a roller coaster type game. They made Secret Agent Barbie.
That sounds
okay,
awful.
That's one of my favorites.
They made Animorphs. Know the Secret.
Okay. Oh, God. So they did a lot of these popular current thing to game kind of translations.
Yeah. And like everything that I'm finding is PC games. And this, as far as I can tell, is the only game they ever made that isn't a PC game.
Interesting. And it sounds like it really shows in the quality and play control.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you've got just the horrible hit detection that you've got in early 3D games. A really weird shooting mechanic where you have to press a button to pick up your gun, and then you press a different button to aim the gun, and then you press a different button to shoot the gun.
Wait, every single time you fire, you have to do this? Oh my God.
And like, it makes sense if you're on a PC, because it can be, you know, three letter keys that are right next to each other.
Sure.
Doesn't really work so well with the PlayStation controller.
No, especially, yeah, because you're having to also control. You're using the pad and you're hitting the buttons. Oh, that sounds just absolutely painful.
Oh, I know, right?
So then very obviously, to your point, these are people who are used to developing for PC, mm-hmm. and they made a PlayStation game without realizing, like, and it's still true today. Like, if you even play a first person shooter today, like Fortnite or something, if you're playing on a PC, you still have a massive advantage over someone using a controller.
Thankfully, I've never gotten into those games anyway.
Oh, you haven't? Oh, yeah, you're probably lucky. And I'm sure that given that, you know, whenever this game was made, unlike today where you're actually getting some voice actors, I'm sure that the voice acting is just god awful in the video game. And that was the personality was such a fun part of the movie. And so instead you've got a voice actor who's like,
"What killed this alien, Agent K?"
And I mean, it looks like too that they didn't make much after this game, because it looks like they went under in 2003, so...
Oh, Gigawatt?
Yeah, so not much happened after this game, so that is... it attests to what their legacy was.
Was there anything fun or...
This is very possibly the highlight of their career.
Oh, God.
Sadly.
It's like the E.T. video game for Gigawatt.
Ooh. Oh, I played E.T. on Atari when I was a kid. That's a terrible game.
Oh, it like bankrupt... It was like ruined Atari.
But anyways,
that's a different story.
That's a different podcast.
Well, was there anything good that whenever you were watching, because I'm kind of just going off of just some vague memory and also just kind of my knowledge of games. Was there anything that you were watching that actually seemed good in the footage that you were watching?
In the time that this came out, the character models actually looked decent.
Yeah.
That's about the best thing I can come up with.
Wow. And what I'm reading right here, it sounds like there were things that are just so typical about these movie to video game conversions. Is one, you're trying to find this happy medium mm-hmm. between people who love the movie and serious gamers, and you really can't meet that, or it's about impossible to meet. So you end up with a game that lacks depth, so gamers don't like it, but you can't put the immersive storyline, like that's just like the movie, into a game. And so the people who love the movie don't like it. And so it's just like a lose-lose.
I'm going to be so happy when all the licensed movie shovelware games just stop coming out. Because...
Yeah.
Ugh.
Well, it looks like, too, that this movie came out in July of 97. And then the video game came out in November of 97 to coincide with the home video release. And so they just pushed it out.
They just pooped these games out. And that's why they're full of bugs. They're unplayable. And I'm sure, Chris, like being a gamer, you've had those moments. I remember being a kid and having my two or three times where I bought the movie video game because I'm like, yeah. And you quickly learn how garbage they are.
They go, and it's just horrible. And I don't know why I'm glad I never got sucked into buying a bunch of these. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I got, I was tricked into a couple, but while I'm looking at the reviews for this now too, yeah, in GameSpot gave it a 3.4. No, that was a great game. But this got a 3.4 out of 10. It got a C+. I'm surprised Game Rankings gave the PlayStation version a 64%. Because that's not the worst thing ever.
And when we say that this game is loosely based on the movie, it's like you have Will Smith's character going from being a regular cop to being a man in black. And then that's pretty much the end of the movie connection.
Oh, God. So it's kind of like that thing like in those video games where you would get a little intro and then that's it.
Pretty much.
Well, maybe they're trying to make a different plot that it was like a leadoff of the original movie.
I feel like it was just that thing where they didn't have the time, money to really make it what it was supposed to be because they were just like, okay, this is your deadline because people have to have their interest of. I'm reading here that at the time, the character models were actually made up of 500 polygons. And I guess for that time, I guess that's a lot.
That is a good amount of polygons.
Yeah, and they actually had the actors' faces texture mapped onto the models. So they actually did have that. So I guess that was, and that would be a necessity, I guess, to get people to buy this wretch.
Yeah, well, it looks like you can only choose from Agent J, K, and L in the game. And that the story, no matter which character you choose, remains the same, which I think would be boring, you know?
Oh, wow, that's actually crazy that you don't get the branch for the different characters. Oh, man, this just sounds worse and worse.
And it's on PlayStation, so you've got that whole disc of space to use. It's not like they were cramming it onto a 64 cart.
Yeah.
Oh, that's actually a really good point, too. Yeah, you had an entire disc.
Oh, one thing I'm reading here that I find interesting is in one of them, on the third level, they involve an investigation into a chupacabra living in the Amazon.
That was my favorite scene from the movie.
I know, right?
I have to think that they started making this game while they were still making the movie, and so they just kind of made things.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So the movie's still going, so they don't have all that info, so they kind of just have to start with what they know and then just keep going.
Which is maybe they base some of this out of the comics, you know?
Yeah, because a chupacabra wouldn't be an alien.
No,
you know, that would be a cryptid that is from here.
Yeah.
Well, this as far as lore goes.
Yep.
Yeah, we actually did an episode on the chupacabra, so
yeah.
I don't remember one living in an Amazon mine, but you know, whatever.
And it's a really short game, too. There's only 4 levels.
Oh, are you kidding?
No, that's it.
Wow.
I mean, I've run across a few other short ones like that, but they were always, like, made short because there was a 64 version, and they were keeping the PlayStation version kind of similar. But this didn't have any other console that they had to worry about space on. So I don't know why they made it this short.
Yeah, but exactly, like you know how like some, like whenever you would burn a CD, you could actually see underneath and you could tell like how full it was based on the burn. Mm-hmm. Like that's you look at the DVD, the disc for this, and it's like the tiniest little sliver because the rest of it's just basically a blank disc.
Yeah,
because of that. I wonder, like, because I know, you know, stage length depending on how long it takes can vary, but I wonder, I'm trying to see if there's something that says, you know, that game took an average of, you know, 6 hours to beat or something, like what the average playthrough time was for this.
I was seeing playthroughs of like an hour and a half. I mean, I wasn't really looking for anything. That just happened to be what popped up when I was looking for videos.
Sure.
But still.
But I still feel like, yeah, like when you're playing a game, like what you want, like when average, like you want 20 plus hours of playtime, you know?
Somewhere in my giant pile of games in the house buried, I do have this game.
Do you really? How did you get it? Did you actually buy it?
I did, at the flea market for $1, something like that. I have no idea where it is, and I wasn't going to tear the house apart to try to find it.
Yeah.
That's okay. So is it still in the wrapper?
Oh, no. I mean, it's not even in the right case.
Oh, okay, okay. I have, and I guess because it was a flea market, it would have been pre-opened anyway. But I have, and I've been guilty of this, but I have a friend who has more games than you could count, and many of them are not even opened yet because it looks cool, but he has so many games he's playing through that he puts it up for later, but then finds the next thing, you know, so it's just unwrapped.
I did find somebody with a Xenosaga 3 still in the wrapper. Got it for $10. Gave him his money and ran away.
Wait, so is that valuable? Because that's like an RPG, right?
When I bought it like that, that was about $100 game.
Wow. Okay. And that's getting into my, and actually I haven't played that one, but a quick aside, like Final Fantasy is my like jam from Final Fantasy 1 all the way on up. I was just so obsessed. So yeah. But unlike those, this, the more you see about it, just the worse it looks as well, too.
I know we're really not saying much about it, but there's not really that much to say about it, you know?
Yeah, no.
And I think that the thing I think, like, what Chris brought up was interesting is that if you're looking, you know, like, you have that first, you know, stage that you're playing through that is, you know, at least related, but the second level, you're on this deserted weather station in the Arctic, and the third, you're investigating a chupacabra, and then you're basically going against this computer expert. So his name is Skip Frails at his private estate. So I guess like he's the mastermind, whatever, behind whatever rail thin plot is going on. But I'm like, that's interesting to me that even if you're making this game and you don't have all the plot of the movie, you would at least keep it all to aliens. Like, you know it's going to be an alien game. Like, why would you deviate this far away from what the real story is going to be? Mm-hmm. Or maybe they thought it was based on the comic more, and they actually found stuff from the comic.
Yeah.
If we could find anybody who worked on this game, please let me know. I want to talk to you. I'm not going to ask you why your game sucks. I just want to know what was going through your head.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice to know, like, what you said before, Chris? Like, this, like, whenever you first hear about this game, I would think it's kind of just a first-person shooter, but it's actually an adventure game. So you're solving puzzles. You know, you're actually having to fight some, but you're, like, it says, like, finding key cards, deactivating systems. You're trying to, it's kind of like when you were playing the old, Adventure of Monkey Island or something, like those old adventure games.
Mm-hmm.
That's what sounds like this was trying to be.
And then it just wasn't.
Yeah, then it just wasn't. Because that's not what you want from this movie translation, I wouldn't think.
No, I
want
to go shoot stuff.
It just sounds like every decision. Yeah, you want to go shoot stuff, exactly.
One thing I'm reading here on GameSpot, actually, is that the perspective, the graphics and gameplay of Men in Black are similar to Resident Evil, yet only the look is nearly as polished, it says. Sure. Which I loved, Resident Evil. That I did play. But.
Yeah, like if this was like Resident Evil, I'm even thinking that old Area 51 game where you just shot at the screen. Like even that would have been more appropriate.
Such a good game.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was, I spent many an hour in college in our dorm playing that in our like foyer. It sounds like though, looking at this, you know, and it's based on all this crap, the game, the original shipment was 100,000 units. It sold 4,800 copies. Oh my God.
And Chris now has one of them.
Chris has one. Oh, it shows that it sold more later, but not even half of the original
release.
But
still, that makes it a lot more rare than Smash Brothers Melee.
Yeah.
Ah, that's very true. That could actually be worth something then.
Yeah, if only anybody actually wanted it.
Unwrapped. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So as much as I feel like I don't need to ask this, compared to the movie especially, what do you think this game gets wrong in the very short version?
Well, pretty much everything, because it has it doesn't match up to the movie except for the intro, and that's about it, you know? There it deviates on its own adventure or own story.
Yeah, and it's just that thing like we had said where it kind of falls prey to that quick, you know, get it out quick, where it fails on in story because it's not true to the movie. So even if you get the person who's the movie fan, they're going to be disappointed. it fails in, I think it fails in genre, like an adventure game. I love adventure games. Oh my God. Grim Fandango is one of my favorite games ever, but people come in here expecting a certain genre. And so it fails there. It fails in play control. It fails in bugs. And so that's why. And so you're appealing to moviegoers who are going to hate it because of the story. And then any hardcore gamers are going to fail because of the genre and the play control. What do you think, Chris?
And I mean, you don't have to make a movie tie-in game that tells the story of the movie again. I mean, go look at the Incredibles game, where the game is essentially a sequel to the movie. You know, you can do something like that if you don't want to just have people play through the movie.
Oh, that's super cool.
But then they come out with this.
But yeah. At least I guess The Incredibles, it's staying true to the story. You know, it's an extension of the story, not something completely random.
Right. And what do you think this game gets right?
Well, I think...
that's going to be hard.
At the very least... mapping the actual lead actors, like you get Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones, and you map their models onto the face. If you're talking in terms just of sales, at least they did that right. You know, at least they've got characters that look like the movie to draw people in. And that's only in terms of sales, because in terms of playability, who cares? And then, like we said, actually kind of at least some of the textures and models sound like they weren't terrible for the time. And then making it for PC and also for... PlayStation, so you actually have PC and then apply like a, you know, a console, I think was, you know, was a good idea.
It's hard for me to say, but at least they tried.
At least they tried. And then I guess the timeliness, you know, they got it out in time to at least make some sales.
Yeah.
What do you think, Chris?
That's about where I am too. It's hard to find something good on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody looks like they're supposed to look. It doesn't look like a horrible game if all you're seeing is screenshots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's, again, whenever you're just looking at marketing, you know, you're marketing something that's awful, but if you look at the back cover, you know, or online, you just see the pictures, it looks good. You know, that's enticing enough for some people.
Yeah.
And finally, if you had somebody who wanted to get into Men in Black, would you hand them this game as a bit of a primer course?
Probably not. In fact, I'd probably hand them the comic books first. Just kind of go in order of sequence of what was created first.
Well, I think you would. I would have to ask you first, how much do I like this person? Because if this is someone that's like, I don't like, I'd be like, yeah, the game is everything. But yeah, other than that, no.
Yeah, I'm not sure what I would want them to experience first between the movie and the comics. I guess that kind of depends on who it is. But... I mean, I'm with you. Unless it's somebody I absolutely hate, I'm not giving them this game.
Yeah, they're not getting it. I'm usually always the fan, like, of reading the book first, like, you know, anything, because I don't want the story ruined. Like, if you watch Harry Potter, you're going to get the gist of the story, and I don't want the full book ruined. And I would say that, I guess, the same for this. I would go comic book first, but I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know.
Usually I'm that way too, but the comics tend to be different enough from the movies to where I can kind of be okay seeing the movie first.
That's true. And they can be like, well, at least like for Men in Black, it's such a short run of the comic. It's not like you're going to have to leave a bunch of stuff out. You know, they can take liberties. So yeah, I agree with you there.
And personally too, because as Cody can attest, is I have my dark side and I like the more sinister stuff. So I think I would enjoy the comic books more.
That is true. That is true. But I also would say, if anything, from what we'd said, you know, like before with some of the examples we were sharing of true life or the real sightings, like go also do some research on the real Men in Black, you know, learn some of the backstory about where this came from, because it's very different, but very fascinating. But you can also kind of see how it spawned what you're seeing on the screen.
And let's not forget, very creepy too.
Very creepy.
Yeah.
Well, Chris and Cody, it's been great having you guys on. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
Like I said, we're BSP Believer Skeptic podcast. You can find us pretty much anywhere by searching BS Pod PHX on Twitter, Facebook, all of that good stuff, Instagram as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You just search either Believer Skeptic Podcast or BS Pod PHX and you'll find us.
And we will have links to that down in the show notes because clicking those is easier than remembering how to spell things.
Yeah. Especially since it's fixed.
And as always, if you want to hear more from me, you can head on over to Twitter at PlayComicsCast or go to PlayComics.com. That has a link to all the social media things. You can go check out the merch store where, hidden in the show notes here, there is a coupon code, but I'm not going to tell you what it is because I'm an asshole. And you can also check out the Patreon, which, you know, if you'd like the show, help support it, make some things happen, or you can go on over to the support page there, and there's some other ways to support it too if you just don't want to get sucked into Patreon. And don't forget that Play Comics is part of the Gunna Geek Network, home to such wonderful shows as In Defense Of, which is a monthly cultural discussion podcast promoting appreciation, support, and inclusion of all fandoms, interests, and hobbies in the interest of true community. They seek to eliminate divisions and intolerance across the spectrum through insightful conversation with the people at each fandom center. And if you like the music that we're rudely talking on top of right now, head on over to soundcloud.com to check out Best Days Music. But mostly, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, and go find yourself a new favorite character. Those in later. Also, I was looking at the comics a little bit, and Agent J looks a bit like Trump. Mm-hmm.
Oh god.
Oh gosh. Huh. What if it's like it was actually all this was written by someone who actually had all this foreknowledge, you know, like about the whole border crisis right now in Trump, and they put all this in as warnings to the future.
That'd be crazy.
Yeah.
You know I'm going to read it with that in the back of my brain now. Do I'm going to read it with that in my brain now.
Now I kind of want to read it just with that in mind and start like looking for signs and messages or anything that could be there. Crazy. Do you still like Will Smith? Because I admit, like what I said at the beginning, whenever he was in this, I thought he was great. But now, I don't know. I just feel like I don't know. I don't like him anymore.
I haven't seen too many of the recent things. Like, I think the last thing I saw with him was Hitchcock.
Oh, I actually heard that, even though I think it was kind of panned, that people actually like, it's kind of one of those big, like, culty classic movies. Did you like it?
I liked it. I mean, it definitely kind of fell off in the back half of it.
Hmm.
Did you see Aladdin, Cody?
I did not see the new Aladdin.
Oh, okay. Uh-uh. Neither did I. I was just asking. You would have of anybody.
But again, I forgot, like, whenever we're looking at the movie again, how cool they are and how they just have all the answers and know who to talk to. Yeah. And again, that's such a contrast to the way that the real Men in Black were. And I think every single encounter that we reported on our episode, because in every encounter we report, they're so awkward. Yeah. And they're so strange and they're so weird.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really interesting to see.
Yeah, because I'm obviously the movie's based on the comics, so they humanized them to, up until the comics came out, we knew what the Men in Black were as, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I actually read that the whole, and I guess this would be the spawn for the comics and the movies, was that the, let's see, the owner or something, or the, not the owner, the creator, his friend introduced him to the concept of Men in Black after he saw just a black van driving down the street. So I think it's kind of interesting that you see this black van driving down the street and you're like, oh, that's like a Man in Black, you know, it's creepy. Yeah. And the creator that spawned the comics, which spawned the movie, was like, what's that? And he hears about it and he's like, wow, that's a really cool idea for you know, something creative. That if that one incident hadn't happened, would none of this stuff exist in media?
Huh.
Bum, bum, bum.
One thing I was reading too, regarding the history, which I mean, kind of going back to what I said earlier about the comics being a little more violent and whatnot, but like in it, you know, in the movie, the Men in Black basically exist to maintain peace between the worlds. They regulate the population of the aliens who are all here with us, you know, make sure that nothing bad happens because of them. But in the comics, it says here that they're just there to kill anyone who is deemed a hazard. And if they are, or if there are any alien threats or any of the supernatural forces, they'll just kill them and ask questions later, which I think is really crazy.
Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah.
So it may not even be a paranormal threat. It just may be kind of like a, they just see someone who's a threat and they just shoot him.
That's, yeah, that is, that sounds very crazy.
Huh. That's really crazy.
All right, you ready for game stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Well, one last thing before getting game stuff that I did want to mention is the Men in Black animated, the cartoon.
Yeah, I didn't know this was a thing.
I did. I saw it when I was younger, but I don't remember anything about them. But I just thought I'd mention that there was an animated series that came out as well after the movie. Do you remember those, Chris, at all?
I never actually watched them, but I vaguely knew that they existed.
Yeah, I remember watching them a long time ago, but I couldn't tell you a single thing as to what they were about or anything. But again, I just thought I'd mention them.
But I like that foreshadowing because wow, there are a few games based specifically on that series, so I'm going to have to watch it later.
Oh, awesome. I did not know that.
Yeah, so game?